We'll open this British teleclass then. And first of all, I'd like to welcome all of our participants around the UK and Ireland and hopefully the wider globe. I'm Tracy Cooper and I'm facilitating this teleclass today. This is a British teleclass and it's kindly put on by Paul Webber and Webber Teleclasses. And we have two sponsors for today's session. We have Virox Technologies and the WHO Clean Care is Safe Care program. So a big thank you to them for ensuring we can put this teleclass on. Now, I'm delighted to introduce our speaker today. Our speaker is David Halicki, who some of you will know, I'm sure. David is Director and Senior Consultant for Crescent Safety Consultancy Limited. And he's a real expert around sharp safety. And he's going to talk to us today about a very topical subject, the European Union Directive on the Prevention of Sharps Injuries in the Healthcare Sector. And as many people will know, this came into force last month. So we're all currently battling with this, I think, David, to make sure we are complying. So I'm going to hand over to David, and I'll come back in when David's finished his presentation.
Okay, thank you very much. My name's actually David Halicki. People say that's a funny name, but David is very common where I come from. But never mind about that, we'll move on. Yes, welcome. It's the first time I've done a teleconference, so please bear up with me, because it's not nervous, but we'll see what goes along. So, the European Directive on the Prevention of Sharps in the Healthcare Sector. We're talking about the regulations themselves and getting the point across. There's a pun there. Hello. You go next slide. Hello. You can see all hellos in different names, right, and different languages, because I believe this is going around the world, so I wanted to make sure that everybody who sees it could be happy and saying hello. Right. So, next slide. The new regulations took effect on the 11th of May 2013. And exactly the same time across Europe, European partners, their countries, similar new legislation was also being applied. And that was due to the Council Directive, EU Council Directive 2010-32 on the Sharps Directive. A lot of people in England complain about all the laws to get from Europe, but this piece of legislation was actually put together with the help of HOSPEM. That's H-O-S-P-E-E-M. That's the European Hospital Healthcare Employers Association, working in conjunction with EPSU, E-P-S-U, who were the European Federation of Public Service Unions. And this directive is a collaboration between employers and staff. We realised something had to be done. As I said, I'm a great believer that this particular piece of legislation and directive should be celebrated by all healthcare workers and as a great day, because we know there's been lots and lots of sharps injuries and there's also the potential for contracting deadly blood-borne viruses. Sorry, gone back was there. Everyday work, next slide, everyday work of healthcare staff does put them potentially at risk of, well, as you know, 30 potentially dangerous pathogens. But the main ones we talk about are Hep B, Hepatitis B, Hepatitis C, HCV, and HIV. And a lot of those are caused through injuries with contaminated needles and other sharps. It's estimated that there are around 100,000 sharps injuries in the UK alone every year. And as a result, so far as we know of, four workers have died as a result of occupationally acquired HIV from sharps in the UK. The Health Protection Agency every now and again pushes out reports, and with a recent one, it's called the Eye of the Needle, where they assess all the information it gets on sharps injuries. And although a lot of sharps injuries happen to nurses and medical staff, about 2% actually happen to people who are not healthcare workers, medical staff. It's the ancillary workers, people like your domestics and porters, who have to deal with it. So that's 2% too many, if you like, because I'll mention it later on, but in this country, the health and safety legislation is employees, and that includes healthcare staff, mustn't do anything to put themselves at risk or put anybody else at risk through their acts and omissions. So that's something to remember. Next slide. All employers were required under existing health and safety law anyway to ensure that risk from sharp injuries were adequately assessed and appropriate control measures were put in place. These regulations only implement those aspects of the European Council directive that were not specifically addressed already in existing UK legislation. And they provide specific detail on requirements that must be taken by healthcare employers, and their contractors. The reason why this is in the background for this new government looking at health and safety legislation, its new guiding principles for transposition of European directives into UK law is they aren't a burden on businesses, so any burden is minimised. So that's why it's been produced as elements of the directive as opposed to repeating things that are already under different legislation. A few interpretations here for you to get a grip with, and you'll find later on there's some information which I reckon is counterintuitive. But interpretation, right, healthcare contractor means an employer whose main activity is the management or provision of healthcare but provides services under a contract to healthcare employer. Okay. Healthcare employer means an employer whose main activity is the management, that's hospitals, everybody else, people provide services. An injury includes the getting the risk of infection. When we talk about sharps, that definition is any object or incident necessary for the exercise of specific healthcare activities. Don't forget medical sharps, although the work equipment for employees are actually medical devices, all right? But any of those which can prick or cause injury. When we talk about using safer sharps, that really means a sharp that has been specifically designed and constructed to incorporate any feature or mechanism which prevents or at least minimises the risk of accident or injury from cutting, pricking or piercing the skin. Next slide. Slide which says new regulation. Right, the new regulation we've got health right to avoid the unnecessary use of sharps, to use safer sharps incorporating protection mechanisms, prevent, and a lot of people still don't realise this, prevent the recapping of needles. That is, the recapping is out now. Use secure containers for disposal of safe disposal medical sharps. And there's emphasis on providing health and safety information and training for staff. Okay, but I'll be touching on that later on. I'm not going to go through every nitty-gritty bit of the regulations. I'm just going to tell you those bits which are really applicable to you. Avoiding unnecessary use of sharps, that's Regulation 51A. As we know, that these sharps, needles, scalpels, etc., are essential tools for effective medical care. But the employer now has a duty to ensure that sharps are only used where they are required. For example, organisations that have reviewed the use of sharps have identified that staff using needles to carry out tasks for which they're not really required. An example there is collecting of urine samples from catheter bags. Well, you know, you don't need sharps to do that. Needle-free equipment is available for certain procedures and should be used where it is reasonably practicable to do so. So if there's a choice of using so, you must go for it. Next slide. Use of safer sharps incorporating protection mechanisms. That's Regulation 51B. The employer must, that's a must, substitute the traditional unprotected sharps with a safer sharp where it's really practicable to do so. You can't really take the cost element. Some organisations saying, well, we can't afford to do it. That is not a reasonably practicable excuse for not being in a safer sharping. It's to do with systems of work more than not having money. If it's a system of work that makes it safer, you must follow it. And the term safer sharp really means any medical sharps that incorporate a feature or mechanism to prevent or minimise the risk of injury. For example, there are now a range of syringes and needles available which shield or cover slides or pivots to cover the needle after use. You as a medical professionals or clinical professionals will be more aware of that than I am. Is a sign there yet? So it's now banned. Prevent the recapping of needles. However, needles must not be recapped unless the employer's risk assessment has identified that the recapping itself required to prevent a risk, i.e. to reduce the risk of contamination of sterile preparations. For example, this is where, your pharmacy department has to prepare some medication that's put into a needle as part of nuclear medicine treatment of a patient. Well, they are allowed to recap the needle, but they can't do directly. They must use mechanisms that will that help them, so some type of mechanical mechanism that resheaths the needle, as opposed to doing it themselves in the old way. As explained, this will allow pharmacists to carry out procedures to prepare medicines, but other people are not allowed to recap needles. Got news on that. Next slide. Place secure containers and instructions for safe disposal of sharps close to the work area. I've actually seen complaints from over time at a different hospital to us, one where I was earlier this year, and a staff nurse was reporting when she was on duty in the ward there weren't any sharps boxes available, so they have to be easily available, which means easily disposable. Right, going once again to existing UK legislation, the COSH regulation, COSHH, for those who don't know what COSH is, it's the Control of Substances Hazardous to Health regulations. That requires already systems to dispose of contaminated waste safely. Contaminated waste includes sharps. The sharps regulations go on to supplement the COSH regulations by requiring that clearly marked and secure containers must be placed close to the areas where medical sharps are used. And instructions for staff on safe disposal of those sharps must also be placed in those areas. Not some type of paper stuck on the wall, which I call institutionalised graffiti, but a proper sign, a proper health and safety sign put up informing the staff. And for infection control purposes, of course, that needs to be laminated. Next slide. Once again, this is just some examples that I've experienced in my career, and I put that there for a reason. The sign which says, or the little medical tag identifying a patient, hospitals may be hazardous to your health because they are. They are not really safe places of work. This is shows you what clinical staff are doing. This is taken from a hospital where I was a couple of years ago. This type of stuff was sent to the kitchen. You might ask yourself why it should be sent to the kitchen. In some cases it's laziness, in some cases it's ignorance, in some cases it's people omitting to follow safety instructions they've been given. Here's another one. We're sent to the same kitchen. That kitchen was getting fed up with getting all this, but this is a photograph taken by myself. I can assure you it's all true and it's not made up. This is a general one, but once again found in yellow waste bags. It's common. Within the UK, we have things for patient events. They're called never events. These are the type of incidents that patients should never be involved with. Well, from my perspective as a health and safety professional, never events for me is staff members, any staff member, getting a sharps injury from a waste bag. It's just unacceptable. Both these incidents took place, that you can see going to the next slide, were witnessed by me at a trust where I was carrying out an assignment earlier this year, and I exceptionally reported these incidents to the Health and Safety Committee. The first one was on the 14th of January, and once again you can see from the description of the incident, carrying a full yellow bag, that's obviously a hospital waste bag, out to the rubbish area when felt a sharp scratch on my leg, looked at the bag and saw a needle sticking out, and that person's leg was bleeding. Well, I reported that, as I said, to the Health and Safety Committee. Lo and behold, 6 weeks later, exactly that's the same type of incident, really, emptied yellow bag from a treatment room, walking along corridor, and felt a sharp pain in leg. When looked, saw it was from a yellow bag. These type of incidents should not happen. All right, I go back to what I've said. The duty of employees is to take care of their own health and safety and that of others. Disposing of sharps incorrectly is putting other people at risk, and therefore these individuals are actually in breach of health and safety legislation. Going on to the next slide. This is one I took at a different hospital quite a few years ago. Somebody decided to dispose of a sharps box without a lid in a yellow waste bag. So these things actually, once again, personally taken by me, these are not made up. This is me following up on incidents that I've investigated. So I would implore any clinical staff listening to please ensure that they and their colleagues work in a manner that doesn't put themselves or their colleagues, no matter where they are in the organisation, at risk. Once again, under health and safety legislation in the United Kingdom, employers are required to provide information, instruction, training and supervision. These SHARPS regulations expand on this. They supplement existing requirements to provide health and safety information and training for staff by requiring that it includes the matters listed below. And this is from Schedule 1 and 2 of the SHARPS regulations, to the extent they are relevant to the employee's work. Going on to the next slide. Right, information that must be provided to the employee in relation to SHARPS, that's Regulation 6. Information can be provided in different ways, including safe operating systems, safety guides, posters. I'm a great believer in posters. Information on websites. You know, you can bring it up as on your screensavers, on your computers, whatever you want to do, as long as you get information across to them. The employer must work with any appointed safety representatives in developing and promoting the information to be given to workers. Going back to Hofbeam and EPSU, that was employers and unions working together. At a recent hospital I was working at earlier this year, we formed what was called the Safer Sharps Group, and that was the health and safety manager, who was myself at the time, acting as interim, occupational health nurse, somebody from facilities who arranged disposal of waste, somebody from supplies. And we had a Royal College of Nursing nurse who was their staff-side representative. And what we did is, rather than a manager chair that safer chart group, we actually had the RPN safety rep chair it, if you like. So it was actually somebody from the union who was pushing the issue within the trust, and we as managers were supporting it. I would recommend that. We are all a team, after all, and we all work towards the greater good. This provision recognises the role of unions and other safety reps in helping to... Yeah, this provision recognises the role of union and other safety representatives in helping to raise awareness. Once again, you've got the staff side on your side. You're more than likely going to get the employees to follow what's required. New slide. Again... The information that the employer must provide to the employees must include the risk they're likely to receive from injuries involving medical sharps, the relevant legal duties on them and staff, good practice in preventing injury, the benefits and drawbacks of vaccination to, for things some people, I've been Hep B inoculated, and I was quite happy to do it, but some people have doubts. And the support that will be available to the person who's injured, provided by the employer. And once again, we touch on this later on when we say see requirements on accident, the follow-up slide. Going on to the next slide. Employee training. I go back to existing UK legislation, whether it's Health and Safety at Work Act or the cost regulations. This has it emphasised as well. Training should be an appropriate form to ensure that employees know how to work safely without risk to health with specific equipment and procedures they will use. So training gives knowledge. Once again, information, instruction, training and supervision are required by employers, i.e. the managers who deliver that. Next slide. Employee training again. The sharps regulations of training must include the correct use of safer sharps, the safe use and disposal of sharps, and what to do in the event of a sharps injury. Once again, we will follow up on that later on. And they need to know what the employee's arrangements are for health surveillance and other procedures. And that will link strongly into the role and function and the work of the employer's occupational health departments, who are big on health surveillance. I know, once again, last year the Health and Safety Executive were going into a trust pre these regulations, and they were looking at COSH and other issues, and one of the things that they focused on is health surveillance. So for those organisations who are listening in, you need to ensure that your health surveillance is tip-top and up-to-date and can be easily accessed by your employees. Arrangements in the event of any injury. The sharps regulations requires employers, i.e. the managers, to take specific actions in the event of any sharps injury within the organisation. This ultimately means they need to have procedures in place to ensure that they, or the managers, the organisation, can respond effectively and in a timely manner when any sharps injury occurs. Going on to the next slide. Duty on employees. Okay, it's not just the employers. Employees also have duties. Where before it might have been written in a policy in different organisations that employee must report injuries, it's now a requirement of the law, this particular piece of regulation, that an employee who receives a sharp injury at work must, it's an absolute duty, notify their employer as soon as they can. The employer will need to ensure they have sufficiently robust arrangements that allow employees to do this, to notify them in a timely manner, including where the employee works out of office hours, for example, out of hours, or where they are working away from the main site. So this includes your peripatetic workers, people like your district nurses and other people going out into the community. The systems have to take into account those type of workers and not just those who have fixed work in fixed premises. A bit of an icebreaker there. Yes, that's what I'd call a needle stick, so they have to get it recorded. Next slide, recording and investigation of the incident. This is Regulation 7.1. Employers must make records, this is all required in other bits of law, make a record of any sharp injury, and they can only do that when they are notified of it, whoever provides that notification. They must investigate. A lot of organisations or managers I know fill in incident forms, but the manager should but doesn't investigate. While managers must investigate the circumstances of the incident, the causes, and take any action required really to stop it happening again. The injured party, the injured person, is required to provide sufficient information, so enough information, to their employer that allows the employer to carry out an investigation. That is also in existing health and safety legislation, that the employee must cooperate with the employer so the employer can fulfill their duties. All right. So it's not an us and them situation, it's together and allow people to do their jobs. Once again, following up, treatment and follow-up of a Sharps injury. This is Regulation 7.2. The employer, the manager, really those in charge, must ensure that when they are notified of any incident in which somebody has been injured by a Sharps that might have exposed them to one of the blood-borne viruses, the employee must have immediate access to medical advice. They have to be offered post-exposure prophylaxis and any other medical treatment as advised by a doctor, and the employee has considered whether counselling would be more appropriate to the employee. This came out before I did this presentation. Since I've done the presentation, there has actually been another article, hold on a minute. So on the 5th of April this year, which was about a month before the regulation took place, healthcare and other workers at risk of psychiatric trauma from a needle stick injury shows new research. This was in the Scientific Journal of Occupational Medicine. And it found that those experienced needle injuries can suffer persistent and substantial psychiatric illness or depression. Once again, the physical effects of a sharp injury are well known to people, but this new research has demonstrated that mental health consequences of sharp injuries. The research has found that those affected suffered a psychiatric trauma similar to that of people have been involved in road traffic accidents. And this has had a major impact on work attendance, family relationships, sexual health, etc. And the duration of the psychiatric systems were linked to the length of time the person injured by the sharp injury had to wait for blood test results. It can be very traumatic. A number of years ago in the hospital, there was a domestic who picked up two sharps bags from a ward where a HIV patient had just died. And once again, somebody had put a sharps in a yellow bag and she had a sharps injury. She was a wreck for a long time until she was given the all clear. The most recent article, which I'm not putting here because it only came out after I'd sent this presentation in, was another article which identified that junior doctors who'd had sharps injuries were also seen to suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. And it was especially those who've had sharp injuries before, so they were really affected by it. So forget the physical side, there is also the mental health side. And that is taken into account when a compensation has been paid out for sharp injuries that have been the cause of the organisation. Not just a physical injury, but the mental stress that people have been put under because of it. So that's something to be aware of. Once again, with everything else, health and safety systems are to monitor, review and audit. Well, these regulations follow the same matter, the same pattern. Regulation 5.2. Sharps regulations follow the same principles as any successful management regime. We've said that quality management's the same, risk management's the same. And that includes reviewing procedures to ensure they are continually effective. However, the regulations specifically require employers to review at suitable intervals the procedures that are in place to implement the following control measures. When you're reviewing, it's always said you need to review on a regular basis. You can set up whatever you want to do yourself, but if there is an incident in the meantime, then I would suggest you need to review your risk assessments to see the control measures put in place were good enough at the time, because if not, then the incident will tell you you need to review your risk assessment and look at your control measures again. So risk assessment and incident reporting are actually two sides of the same coin. They shouldn't be looked at separately, they should be looked at together. Use of medical sharps at workshop review is avoided to make sure that it's still being avoided, that somebody hasn't brought in a new medical device that you don't know about, a new sharp device. When medical devices are used at work, safer sharps should be used where possible. So maybe at the moment there isn't a safer sharps device for a particular practice that's carried out. But you need to keep an eye out if something new comes on the market that is a safer sharps device, that you move to that as soon as reasonably practicable. Needles that are medical devices that are not capped after use at work unless the risk of injury to employees is effectively controlled by the use of a suitable appliance, tool or equipment. This is going back to the other slide he was talking about, where pharmacists would need to kneecap a needle after they put medication into it. Well, once again, they can't do that by hand. It has to be done in an effective way so nobody's going to get injured. You need to review the safe disposal of sharps that are not designed for reuse, because there may be stuff from those around, as we discussed. They need to review the written instructions that are available for employees to see if it's still topical and effective. Need to make sure that clearly marked and secure containers are located close to areas where medical sharps are used at work. I often see that managers think something's happening, and when they go and have a look, it isn't. All right, you need to keep a close eye on things, because employees are human beings, and sometimes they tend to take shortcuts and they might deviate from the safe system of work that's put in place. They are human beings, and this is once again where supervision comes in. You need to ensure that people are doing what they should be doing, and they are keeping medical sharps boxes close to them, where they are working. Human beings are human beings. They will make errors. That's what supervision and management's about. Once again, a suitable review would involve gathering the following type of information. You need to look at the degree of compliance that's being undertaken. As I said, sometimes you give training and all the rest of it, but for whatever reason, the staff find difficulty with it and will go their own way. So you need to look at that to see how you can improve things. Any areas where procedures are absent or inadequate, once again, this is monitoring, review and supervision. All right. You may think it's okay to put a procedure in there, but if it doesn't work on the ground, you're going to have to change it. New safer sharps, as I said, might become available later down the line, and you really have to use them. You need to ensure continuing consultation with staff. Communication, all right, is a good thing. Keep the communication route going. I'm a great believer, and I go on about top-led, bottom-fed. Managers lead, staff input in, and it's all a cycle. And you need to review any injury or incident data to see if you can pick up patterns or hotspots in certain areas that will lead you to look at why certain types of incidents are happening in a certain area and not in another area. It makes common sense. I know you get lies, damn lies and statistics, but really, statistics are a useful tool so you can spot trends and patterns that are appearing, and you can react in a timely manner. Now, this is where it's counterintuitive to me. When they were talking about bringing a directive in a long time ago, what employers and the unions really wanted was a piece of legislation that covered anybody who would come across sharps within their line of work. However, as things happen, things change and things put in the way, so that's why this particular directive was only aimed at those working in the healthcare sector. I believe there's people in Europe at the moment trying to bring in a directive which will lead to regulations, which will really protect anybody who works with sharps. But I'm afraid that isn't the case at the moment. For example, this is how, from my mind, still it gets. They're not applicable to school nurses employed directly by the school. So if it was a school nurse employed by a hospital going to that school, she would be covered by the legislation. But if they're employed directly by the school, they're not. Now, I don't understand that. Maybe you can, but that's the way that it's going at the moment. Medical staff providing care in prisons, whether employed by the prison itself. So once again, I've known, a trust I was in provided services to Stile Prison, a women's prison, so they would be covered. But if any medical staff were employed by the prison itself, the regulations wouldn't be applicable to them. It's non-healthcare tractors to a healthcare employer, which is understandable. So you're talking about your estate type of contractors, that's okay, but healthcare contractors would be. It doesn't apply to businesses that are contracted to provide non-healthcare services to healthcare employers, we can understand that, such as catering or building or your estate's people, facilities, plant. They will be only required to act if those who work for them may be exposed to medical shafts while they are working there, which, if you have a look at the previous photographs I've shown you, in some cases, has been the case. In this country, the Health and Safety Executive produce what's called Health Services Information Sheets. The seventh one they produced, which came out in March this year, is HSIS7. And it's guidance for employers and employees on the health and safety sharps intermittent healthcare regulations 2013. Following the guidance is not compulsory. You don't have to follow it unless it's specifically stated. And you are free to do anything you feel you require to do to comply with the regulations. But if you follow it, you'll be doing enough to comply with the law. And health and safety inspectors will seek to secure compliance with the law and may refer to the guidance. So that's what they would be. If an HSE inspector comes in, they will look at health HSIS7 and use it as a tool for judging whether you complied with the law or not. So you follow HSIS7, you should be doing enough. That's a tip for you. Once again, this information sheet is freely available, downloadable, and won't cost you anything. And I'll put the web link there for you to look at. And also the Health and Safety Executive have actually got a section on their site which deals specifically with health and social care services. And once again, I'll put the link to you there. So after this presentation, take your time, go and have a look at it. You'll find lots of useful information on sharps, and may I add, apart from sharps, other issues that might interest you working in healthcare, things like bed rails and things like that, and dermatitis, legionella, all those things that could affect the healthcare sector. But this presentation is looking at sharps, so that is pure information on sharps. But I recommend it is a good website to look at. Once again, a lot of people have been concerned now because within the UK, a lot of issues are being looked at by the Care Quality Commission, CQC, but they'll be looking really at the nursing side of care within healthcare organisations. The HSE, as always, will keep an eye out and keep the ear to the ground. They will follow and apply what they do already. So if people complain to them or they get a number of RIDORs that are in place, they monitor how many RIDORs are coming from an organisation, what type, they may intervene. All right. Once again, they tend to take action if they identify sharps, use this phrase, if they identify anything as a matter of evident concern during investigation or inspections, or if somebody's in the newspaper, for example, somebody reports them to the newspaper or somebody sends them a letter, they will come in and investigate and enforce. Enforcement can either be an improvement notice, a prohibition notice, or prosecution. So it's up to the HSC, depending on the degree of non-compliance with the legislation. Right, I've finished mine a little bit now. Any questions you would like to ask me, I will try to answer you to the best of my ability.
Thank you, David. That was an absolutely excellent presentation. We will open the lines up to any questions from people who are listening in because we've got plenty of time. So if anybody does have questions, would you like to unmute your phones? Okay, this may be a bit of a scramble, but if you do have a question, shout up and we'll try and take you in some sort of order.
I'm an audit and surveillance practitioner in our local hospital, but I also look at dental practices, which is my background in Italy.
Dentist.
Yeah, you know what I'm going to ask you, don't you?
Yeah, go on.
The question I get asked all the time is resheathing of needles, which they do constantly in dental practice. So
they shouldn't.
Suggest to use resheathing devices, or
no?
Are they acceptable?
One of my clients, I'm aware of this issue. One of my clients is the Dental Buying Group, and I'm aware of this issue. And I know I've been put on a dental website that some dentist somewhere believes that he's got a method for resheathing needles. There isn't a method for resheathing needles unless, going back to that slide, unless it's done, the only way you can resheath needles, let me close it down, so re-emphasise where it is, let me go back again, excuse me, while I just take my time. Basically, it has to be done in a way, not one-handed, it mentions, yes, you use mechanisms in place to do it. That's clearly what the HCO on about. All these different systems say, well, I can resheath a needle, you can't.
Yeah. Regulation 5.1.
Yeah, there you go. Needles that are medical sharp.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. So, Rizupatid, it's saying needles that are medical sharp are not capped after use unless the risk of injury to employees is effectively controlled by use of a suitable appliance, tool, or other equipment. That is quite clear.
That's what I say.
Yeah, well, so I know, but people come up with these other ideas about one-handed resheathing. You can't. It's quite clear there. You can only do it by the controlled use of a suitable appliance, tool, or equipment. And I know there's been problems with dentists. There was with the pharmacist, which I spoke about. But this is because consultation went on before this happened, so there's also been issues with the organisation, what did the child anaesthetist. Lots of different organisations saying, "Oh, we can't. You know, we need this to resheath." You don't. You can't do it in the old age. You have to follow. It's quite clear. You can only do it by the use of a suitable appliance, tool, or equipment. It doesn't change any. Whichever interpretation on it is quite clear. Only by using a suitable appliance, tool, or equipment. It's just, people think, no, just read it. those words, suitable appliance, tool, or equipment. There's no other way of doing it.
Yeah. Okay.
There's
a lot of new devices out there, but dentists don't like them. They're not robust enough, and they're quite weak in order to give...
But I understand there's certain ones that pose an issue, but I believe there's other ones coming on the market. And that's what you have to keep an eye out for the newer ones coming to the market, and you use the one that's most appropriate. I mean, just because, I don't like it at all, there's other issues. I don't like doing this. Well, I'm sorry, it's been brought in. It's now the law, so you have to follow it. It's been brought in for although individuals might not like it, it's been brought in for the greater good, right? And once again, going back to health and safety legislation, even applies to self-employed people, right? It doesn't provide safety.
Yeah.
Health and safety law applies to self-employed people, which the dentist might say he is. But once again, even the self-employed have to carry out work so it doesn't put themselves or other people at risk.
For other people at risk, yes, of course.
Yeah, that's what the law's about. Every employer, if you were my employee and I breached a duty to you, I would possibly get prosecuted, dependent, or serve an improvement notice or whatever, under Section 2 of the Health and Safety at Work Act. If you're not in my employ, are you a contractor or you're a patient or somebody, a bank member of staff coming in, because bank people aren't in your employ, for example, a temporary worker coming in from the agency, then you would be prosecuted under Section 3 of the Health and Safety at Work, etc. Act.
Okay.
All right, and that's how it applies. And the same applies to contractors, they owe duties the other way. But that's what it lies. So they shouldn't be putting themselves at risk. You've been there for a reason.
Of course.
Excellent.
Yeah,
Thank you, David.
Is that clear enough?
Thank you. Yes, it's clear.
Right.
You were just confirming what I'd been saying, so that was good for me.
Well, that's fine. I'm glad we think along the same lines. We must be soulmates. What do you think?
Okay. Do we have any other questions for David, please? I've got a couple of questions, if nobody else has, actually, but I don't want to monopolise. David, one of the things that in my sort of experience is that under-reporting of injuries is still a big issue, no matter where you go.
That's right.
I mean, and you look and you get issues around staff awareness, and then you get issues around staff being reluctant to report when they know they should report. I mean, do you have any guidance on additional things that people can do to overcome this historic underreporting?
Well, a lot of it is, I would say, goes back to the culture of the organisation. I mean, if you want to know about it, providing patients with being open with them, well, staff and managers need to be open with one another. One of the groups that tend not to report sharps injuries because they take it as part of the job is consultants. And it's a great problem with getting consultants on board because they don't see being part of them. But it's a hearts and minds issue. You need to inform people that it is not a punishment. They will not get into trouble for reporting it, and because they now have a legal duty to do so, because it's there so that they don't become infected, they don't become stressed. The employer has a duty to protect them, and they have a duty to cooperate. So it's all about learning from this, because statistics we get, the more a manager can't recommend for the greater good, and once again, managers shouldn't be chastising people for getting a sharps injury. We are human beings. What we need to look at is not, like I said, punishing somebody in any way. Does this person need further training? Does this person need further report? And if you can get that type of safety culture into the place where everyone buys into safety, all right, and we can learn from events, not just bury them, right, then that tends to work, as far as I'm concerned. A good health and safety culture. As I said, top led, bottom fed. Everybody needs to buy in and have ownership. Is that okay?
Thank you. Yep, that's excellent. One final question, if I may, David.
Yeah.
And that's your view on the difference between devices, safety devices, with either active or passive mechanisms. Because obviously there's a mix of devices out there, and the sort of opinion on whether one sort is better than another seems to vary. I'd just be interested in your view on that, and also your view on perhaps the legal perspective on that.
Well, the law requires that where reasonably practicable, and money can't be used as an excuse, you should use safer, sharp devices. Now, I'm not a clinician. But that, to me, doesn't make a blind bit of difference at all as part of the safer, sharps group. Because even if I thought, if from a subjective point of view, I thought one device was better than another device, I wouldn't recommend it, because I only do things from an independent and objective manner. What you have to realise is different devices out there, also within organisations, there's different clinical groups who might need different devices, right? And I said there's plenty to use. What I did, and it was at Northampton Trust earlier this year, which was the Safer Sharps group, we knew there were a number of different devices available. So what we did on one of our meetings, we opened up the boardroom, we invited, for example, three different suppliers of sharps devices. We invited representatives from the wards and clinical departments to come and have a look what was on offer, let them see them, let them try them, and then they decided what was best to use from them. And almost majority of them went for one particular device, and I won't name what it is because it'd be wrong to do so, because they said they understand why and the use of it and all the rest of it. So it's really, you should go by the consensus of the staff using it. They are the ones who know what will be best for them on their particular ward or department. And generally, throughout the trust, you can go for one type or a couple of types, depending on what you need. Risk assessments shouldn't really be generic. Risk assessments need to look at individual issues, individual wards and departments, and what their needs are. Does that make sense?
It does. Thank you. That's really helpful, actually, David. Thank you.
Right, it's
okay,
getting
then.
The people on board who have to use it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, one final opportunity for anybody with questions for David.
How is it best to promote this? Because people don't want to listen. GPs are notorious at the moment for No, I haven't heard of it. You've sent them an email, you've sent them everything, and they just say, oh, what's that again? They, because it's a long word, they are not interested.
Part of the issue is, but it links to my friend who was a dentist, is that part of the issue is that I think they'll start to get on board more, as the dentists are starting to do, since the CQC have started investigation. The GPs were given a bit of a...
Does the CQC actually know about it yet?
well, what I'm saying is part of the issue is you need to remind them, because, like I said, the dentist got investigated by the CQC first, and a few dentists have received improvement notice or whatever's been going on because they haven't been following good practice for certain issues.
Yeah.
And our dental friend Bud told you that. Now GPs are going to have the same CQC inspection regime as a dentist would have, and that in itself, once a few GPs have been brought to task or educated, it'll spread amongst the other ones. All you can do is, like I said, well, it's the same, you know, it's like the same with consultants. What's the difference between God and the consultant? Well, the saying is that God knows he's not a consultant. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people have to realise now that they are not above it all. They are part of a team, and you have to work to the organisation they're working for, and they owe a duty of care to themselves. In other words, and they need to get on board, and they will actually find that it's part of safer practice, it's part of the quality of care. You go on back and look at the CQC standards, for example, you look at Regulation 16 Outcome 11, that's to do with medical devices, is it not?
Device.
And the requirements there. So once again, they have to follow... when they get investigated, CQC outcome 11 on medical devices, and you look at issues like you look at 12, 13 and 14 around staff and staff competence and staff training, and that's another issue they're going to have to take on board, and that includes sharp training. And
it's
those issues,
couldn't they? Yeah,
well, that's an issue, and that's why I'm saying they need reminding that doing this is not only one of the things I always do. I never say look into health and safety. I always take the integrated approach, and I apply health and safety and CQC standards. Right?
Yeah.
What
yeah.
way
yeah,
I explain
well.
It
yeah.
is at the moment, same as some managers in some organisations, NHS organisations and GPs appear to be working and thinking in silos. All right, they just in their own particular area. What might change this is the fact now you're going to come into GP commissioning groups. So rather than trying to influence individual GPs, you influence the GP commissioning group, who will influence the GPs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. It does.
But it's also a quality of care issue, the devices you use. I mean, this organisation I'm in now, for example, has gone for a certain type of device, a safe device for diabetic patients, and that's what you need to be looking at, because you need to be looking, it's a quality of care issue, because in some cases you wouldn't want a patient, for example, patient safety, if you use a safer sharps device, you're less likely to injure the patient, which sometimes gets happened in sharps issues, you know, which it shouldn't do. So don't only come in from a staff safety point of view. It's a patient safety and a quality of service. We're all now, healthcare sector, about providing quality of service to the patient. It links into patient safety as well. And like I said, what people need to do is don't, like I said, work or think in a silo. What they need to do is look at this as one piece of the jigsaw and look at the cover or look at the picture on the front of the box and see where it all fits in. They have to have joined up thinking and not be so, you know, dogmatic and you know, not look out of their own silo. Bring down the barriers, work with others, work safely. It's better for everyone.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say.
It's a bit like that with when the HTML 105 was introduced to dental practices, that nobody wanted to look at it, but now, you know, most of them have embraced it. So
what I'm saying is if you look at the HTM, just the HTM, for example, health technical memorandums, good practice or guidance, all right? What we're talking about here And that's why I'm saying you push it from both sides, is legislation, right?
Yeah.
And as I said, if you use this legislation, this and COSH, and the CQC, the actual legislation is the Health and Social Care Act 2008, closed brackets, Regulated Activities Regulations 2010. So it's an existing piece of legislation, and so therefore it's two bits of legislation you wouldn't be complying with.
Yeah.
Lovely. Thank you. I'm going to have to draw the discussion to a close, I'm afraid, because we're just about out of time.
Okay,
David,
that's fine.
Thank you. Thank you for answering those questions.
You've got my email address, haven't you? You've got my email address. If people want to email me, that's not a particular problem.
Like
I'm quite happy to.
I'd like to know you, David, if I could.
David, just to thank you again and our sponsors, can I please draw people's attention to the final slides on the presentation, which give you a reminder about future recordings that are coming up. The recording of this will be available on the Weber Teleclass website fairly quickly after today's session, I believe. And with that, I will thank you very much, thank everybody for listening, and I will close the teleclass.
Just one word, if I may.
Of course.
Take care, stay risk aware. Well, that's four words, isn't it? So think of this, wherever you do, take care, stay risk aware, stay safe, everybody.
Thank you, David. Bye-bye.